Picture it. January 1985. Beverly Hills Cop, starring Eddie Murphy, is reigning supreme at the movie box office, and Madonna's Like a Virgin is number one across the US. This means nothing to bears around North America that are all being born around this time. Cubs are being born in a nice warm den, the mother is awake on and off, licking them to keep them clean and dry, and it also stimulates circulation and assists in biological development. As a little aside, the term licking them into shape actually originates from mother bears licking their cubs into shape, as it were. In medieval folklore, it was believed bears were born formless and shapeless, and hence needed licking into shape. At 4 weeks old, the cub's ears open. At 5 weeks, their eyes open. Teething begins about 6 weeks, and by 8 weeks, their premolars are erupting. And in Hudson Bay, Canada, the 1980s were a highly productive time for polar bears. Roughly two-thirds of the world's polar bears live in Canada. Most females around this time had twins, some singletons, and some triplets. Many weaned their cubs after the first year. These yearling cubs strike out on their own. This is where the subject of today's episode, a young polar bear, may have started off life. We don't know. But what we do know is what happened next in Bearla's story. That's spelt B-A-R-L-E and pronounced Bearla. Bearla was a wild female polar bear whose freedom was taken by human greed and who suffered unimaginable hardships due to human ignorance, but also lived to recover from her trauma through human compassion. The human agenda was put to one side, and the animal's agenda put first. Bearla was one of seven bears, the others being Alaska, Royal, Willie, Masha, Boris, and Kenny. They were collectively known as the Suarez Seven. There is a place in the remote northwoods of Minnesota, North America. It's located near the town of Orr, population approximately 300. Outside of this town is an area where normal rules are put to one side. It's a place where humans and wildlife meet. It's a special place, wholly unique and not without its controversies. This is the Vince Schuette Wildlife Sanctuary, run by the American Bear Association, ABA for short. The ABA is dedicated to promoting a better understanding of black bears and all wildlife through education, observation, and experience. I'm your host, Philip Stubley, and welcome to the Bear Den. Hello, and here we are again, and I've read a book. This wasn't one that I plucked from the shelf at the Vince Schuette Wildlife Sanctuary. However, there is another book by this author that is located there. That one is called Smiling Bears, and the author is Elsa Poulsen. In this episode, I wanted to talk about her other book, Bearla's Story, as I thought this would be a great way to bring polar bears into the bear den and share, as the cover says, one polar bear's amazing recovery from life as a circus act. Elsa's engaging telling of this story shows how Bearla was ultimately able to express herself free from fear. In this book, there are some wonderful examples and insights Elsa shares of bear behaviour. Elsa Poulsen was best known for rehabilitating bears from the psychological trauma of captivity. Poulsen dedicated her life to improving the bears' quality of life. She did this through her work as a zookeeper at the Calgary and Detroit zoos, and in one-on-one consulting with zoos, sanctuaries, and wildlife rehabilitators where she helped bears in distress. Elsa was known for approaching a bear and asking, "Who are you, and what can I do for you?" So, before we dive in and talk about the book, right, polar bears, let's do a little bit of our usual species overview. Polar bears are marine mammals, and their Latin name is Ursus maritimus, literally meaning sea bear. The most recent estimate of when polar bears diverged from brown bears is less than 500,000 years ago, although scientists continue to discuss this. Polar bears are found in the Arctic region in five main countries. They are Canada, Greenland, Norway, Russia, and the USA, specifically in Alaska. They are the most carnivorous bear, consuming almost no plant foods. Polar bears have evolved specific adaptations for hunting seals, most notably a white-coloured coat, which is actually made up of hollow, translucent hairs that appear white. These enable them to stalk seals, resting on the surface or popping up through a breathing hole. Male polar bears can grow up to 1,300 pounds, or about 590 kilograms. And females can grow up to 650 pounds, or 295 kilograms. Polar bears are listed as vulnerable on the IUCN Red List, with estimates of 26,000 individuals in the wild. Their main threat comes from loss of sea ice due to climate change. Okay, we're primed. We've met Bella. We've met Elsa. We've heard about polar bears. Let's dive in. So the story for Elsa starts when she met Bella on a cold November night in 2002. She was waiting, along with Detroit Zoo staff, at the Detroit Metropolitan Wayne County Airport for a plane that was running 30 minutes late. Finally, the FedEx package arrived, and inside was a small, raggedy furred bear with a soft, sweet, and innocent expression, like that of a cub. This bear moved right up to the mesh of the transport box to meet Elsa. This took Elsa by surprise, as abused or traumatized bears normally shy away from any contact. For Bella, she had suffered almost 17 years of torment in the circus world until she arrived at this moment. Records of Bella's origins are scant. Records of most animals taken from the wild in this era are often sketchy or non-existent. Some are purposely falsified to muddy the legal waters. Bella was likely born in 1984 or 85, orphaned, and then possibly brought to Germany in 1986. From there, she became the quote-unquote property of Eric Klant, who contracted his bear show to the Mexican Suarez Brothers Circus with trainer Alfred Freddy Gaffner. This was in 1989. You probably don't need me to tell you that the tropical Caribbean is not ideal habitat for polar bears, who, over 5 million years, have evolved to handle extreme frigid temperatures. Polar bears can actually overheat while walking in the Arctic tundra if the ambient temperature is above minus 4 Fahrenheit, forcing them to plunge into an icy pool or lay flat on their bellies on frozen surface to cool off. So that slow pace of theirs is very deliberate. It was in 1996 that Canadian couple Ken and Sherry Gilgotti from Winnipeg, Manitoba, observed the Suarez 7 beaten with rods to perform in Mexico. They were told three of the bears, Bella, Kenny, and Royal, were from Manitoba. Photographs from the circus pamphlet the Gilgottis brought home were published in the Winnipeg Free Press, and there was an international public outcry. After investigations by ZooCheck, it suggested if these three had come from Canada, it was possibly by illegal means. You'll hear how tangled and inconsistent the records for these bears were. In 2001, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, otherwise known as PETA and AZA, were receiving numerous complaints from the public. Despite appeals to stop the circus entering Puerto Rico, a US protectorate, the circus was granted a permit. This was based on photographs of the bear's conditions rather than a physical inspection. However you may feel about this, this was the beginning of the path to the bear's rescue. Aside from the heat, the bears lived with cruelty on a daily basis, with many reports of whipping and being beaten with sticks. Several witnesses described seeing the bears performing in a show visibly panting and filthy and being held in small, grimy cages with basic needs completely neglected. Trainer Freddy Gaffner even complained that the US government forced him to purchase a pool and air conditioning for the bears. Consequently, the bears didn't want to leave the air-conditioned holding area to do their shows. What a cheek. The pool that was purchased was 8 feet in diameter and 4 foot in depth, barely enough for one bear to fit. Animal welfare investigators recorded temperature spikes of up to 113 degrees Fahrenheit in 2001 and 2002, where the bears were being held at the circus. Bella and Alaska, two small females, were also at the mercy of their own kind. Under the ever-present threat of human trainers in the performance ring, any one of the large males would often lash out and attack a female in some sort of twisted Stockholm syndrome. One wonders how anyone could treat a fellow creature like this, and sometimes the perpetrators are surprised they're even being accused of abuse or neglect. In 2002, Puerto Rico Department of Natural and Environmental Resources brought misdemeanor cruelty charges against the Suarez brothers. The circus and their two vets stated that the polar bears were acclimated to the tropics as they were born in captivity and had travelled a few times in the tropics. This does ignore how polar bears are essentially designed to keep warm in Arctic conditions. They have immensely dense fur consisting of a woolly undercoat interspersed with long guard hairs. Polar bears can actually have 14,840 hairs per square inch, compared to humans who average a paltry 700 hair follicles per square inch on their head. If anything, polar bears have issues cooling off. Acclimating to the tropics was being used as an excuse to justify deficiencies in maintenance and care of these animals. Unfortunately, the presiding judge did not see it this way and found in favour of the circus. The circus provided lack of choice, unrelenting daily stress, and physical and mental pain in an environment completely unsuitable for them. Alaska, one of the Suarez Seven, was actually travelling under a false identity. The circus identified her as Snowball, who was born in Zoo Atlanta in 1983 and from there was eventually sold on to Zoo Rostock. The director of Zoo Atlanta, Terry Maple, poked major holes in this claim when he gave public proof that Snowball died at Zoo Rostock in 1994, aged 11. Thanks to this information, this proved bear identity theft. Alaska was rescued and confiscated from the circus in March 2002 by US Marshals and representatives from the US Fish and Wildlife Services at gunpoint. The plan had to be kept so secret that passage on a flight was booked for one lion so as not to tip anyone at the circus off. Alaska found a home at Maryland Zoo, Baltimore, where she was described as one of the calmest bears staff ever worked with. It eventually dawned on staff to perform a BAER test on her. This is pronounced bear. It's a brainstem auditory evoked response, and they actually found that she was completely deaf. Alaska befriended a male bear called Magnet at the zoo, and they became inseparable, and he was effectively her hearing aid. So, that's 1 out of 7. Due to mounting pressures, complaints, daily visits from inspectors, and the likelihood they wouldn't get a permit to move the bears, the circus chose to abandon the polar bears and their caretakers in Yabucoa, Puerto Rico, and the show moved on. Come November 2002, a diverse group of people came together to rescue the remaining Suarez 7. Work began to improve the bears' conditions. I mean, it's quite an operation to, you know, anaesthetize, perform health checks, and transport 6 polar bears internationally via aircraft. As I've said, the history of each bear is murky. Male bear Kenny's personal history, for instance. If he did end up at the Ruhr Zoo as a cub, he may have been sold to the circus in 1987. There is no mention of him again until 1999, when he was mentioned along with Boris in the British newspaper The Independent, where they both were part of the state circus of the German Republic. Records seem to indicate they ended up at Zoo Valkenburg in Holland, thought to be the surreptitious name of Eric Klant's private animal collection. From there, they were hired as part of the Suarez Brothers Circus in 1998. Upon rescue in 2002, both bears were kept together and sent to Point Defiance Zoo in Tacoma, Washington. Now on to Royal's murky history. From his possible shipment to the Ruhr Zoo in 1986, like Bärle, he too disappeared for years after he was reported to have been sold to an unnamed circus in 1987. Royal and Bärle both reappeared years later in 2000 in the Suarez Brothers Circus records. Where they were for those 13 years is a mystery, but they were thought to have arrived at the circus with trainer Freddy Gaffner from Germany in 1989. Sadly, Royal died during the rescue in November 2002. A necropsy determined that the cause of death was due to overheating. No one can quite agree on the bears Willy and Masha's provenance either. Some say they were captive-born at Zoo Valkenburg in Holland in 1985, but others believe Willy was mother-raised at Copenhagen Zoo and Masha born at Zoo Objed in Moscow. They fell off the radar until, again, in 1998, turned up at the Suarez Brothers Circus. Willy had signs of a broken nose and supposedly once swiped at his trainer and was declawed as a result. Masha died in June 2007 and a necropsy showed he likely suffered incomprehensible pain over the years due to a broken vertebrae that had malformed in the healing process. And so, all the bears have been relocated and found nice homes. So what about Bärle? After arriving at Detroit, Bärle's ambient temperature had dropped from wildly tropical to 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Maybe this explained her calm demeanour, or the fact that when the circus travelled and she was inside a transport crate, she was alone and safe from her human predators or other male bears. The welcoming party drove back to Detroit Zoo, and her crate was taken to her enclosure's animal entrance door, known as Slides in Sioux speak. Elsa sat by the enclosure while the crate was fixed in place and concentrated on making a good impression with Bärle, holding out some grapes. Bärle locked eyes with Elsa and came up to her and gently took the grape with her lips and then intentionally dropped it, a small smile on her face. From experience, Elsa knew to interpret this as politeness. A bear may not want or need what she was offering, but will take it if they want the interaction to continue. If the bear is annoyed, they will simply refuse to take the object, make eye contact, or could even escalate matters to a paw slam or huffing. Of course, Elsa wasn't sure if Bärle liked grapes or if this was what she was doing. Bärle's diet at the circus consisted largely of day-old bread, lettuce, carrots, and sometimes cheap dog food. Bärle took a second grape. It didn't matter if she ate it or not. Elsa just wanted to show Bärle that her new human companions were trustworthy, and that she could be comfortable. Bella looked older than her years, but she had a cub-like innocence and sweetness about her. Trust shone through her eyes and expressions, and it turned out she did like grapes. Elsa called her name, and Bella stepped into her new home. There was no way to tell if she knew this wasn't just another holding pen for another circus trip, but the drop in temperature, grapes, larger enclosure, and nest of fresh straw couldn't have escaped her attention. She was tentative with the straw at first, but soon enough was in full-on roll-and-rub dancing mode until she crashed out and went to sleep on this lovely bed that was just right. For the first 2 days of her 30-day quarantine period, Bella basically slept all the time, and why shouldn't she? For bears that are so understimulated and deprived for many years, they need to be slowly acclimated to a more complex living situation. What Bella wants, Bella gets, became the team motto. Waiting for her, post-quarantine, was a 170,000-gallon, 13-foot-deep saltwater pool, a 30,000-gallon freshwater pool with live trout, a grassy tundra enclosure with an outdoor cave, and a pack ice enclosure with scattered woodchip beds, a stream, and live seals of various species as neighbours. I mean, I wish I had this much space. This facility was called the Arctic Ring of Life, and had just been completed in 2001. What's more, 7 self-confident and self-possessed polar bears already inhabited this area. Elsa continued building her relationship with Bella, and plenty of grapes were involved. Past experience would mean Bella would expect anger and abuse. Slowly but surely, Elsa spent time with her, and Bella became more responsive. Elsa noted that Bella crawled over to her initially, likely due to her being used to small cages and crawling being the only way she could move. Luckily, Bella worked out, walking was much more comfortable and achievable in her new, bigger space. Hungry bears in captivity pace in anticipation of the next meal, so it's important to satiate them as early as possible in the morning. They generally get up when the sun is up. Bella was used to a poor diet, and she initially wasn't eating all that much. It was hard to know if this was a medical issue, if she didn't know what was edible, or that she had no appetite, or a combination of the three. In her circus cage, Bella paced most of the day, 3 steps forward and 3 steps backwards with a rhythmic head swing and a little half step at either end of the routine. The team weren't sure if this had a cause and effect trigger, or if there was an obsessive compulsive quality to it. Whichever, they didn't want to risk this behaviour resurging. Elsa would devote her days spending time with Bella, bonding and also eating, in the hope that good food advice would rub off on her. Bella observed Elsa keenly. Elsa's perseverance finally paid off when Bella began joining Elsa in her meals. Elsa even managed to teach Bella how to de-shell a peanut properly, the bear way. They shell the peanut in their mouth and spit the shell out without touching it. As Bella approached a more normal caloric intake for a female polar bear of her size, her activity levels increased, and she began engaging with her surroundings and interacting with enrichment, such as puzzle feeders. Bella was slow-moving, methodical, and most often gentle in her approach to things. 6 days after her arrival, Elsa noticed Bella favoured her front left paw. Elsa placed her right hand on the mesh to see if Bella would place her right paw there. Bella then broke eye contact and stood on her hind legs and grabbed a shelf with her left paw in an odd attempt to hoist herself up. It was then Elsa realised Bella was trying to perform a circus trick for her, at Elsa's command. Bella stopped, but paced on and off for 24 hours following this. After this, the team put a halt to any form of training for Bella. Bella would only be included in training if she chose to participate after observing the other bears being trained, and she understood she wouldn't be punished for not participating, like she was at the circus. Over time, Bella went through all the enrichment given to her, and the team had to come up with more complex items to satisfy her. She began pacing, and this was somewhat positive, as it meant her recovery was progressing. But they needed to ensure this behaviour wouldn't become entrenched, and decided to move her to the Arctic Ring of Life. Bella was immobilised, given a checkup, and moved from quarantine to the new building, which had 10 rooms averaging 140 square feet each. Each room adjoined one another, with an access door in the middle so bears could get more room if required. Firstly, Bella was to get access to the entire area while the other bears remained outside for a few days. This would give her time to get to know the building and be able to view the other bears without interacting with them if she didn't want to. For their part, the other bears were all interested in this new arrival and congregated around the outer area, sticking their noses into any crack they could find to sniff for any olfactory information. Upon waking up, Bella immediately began sniffing the area, identifying the presence of other bears. She also began spending time grooming herself, which was the first time the team had seen her take any interest in. Her pacing seemed to have vanished, and she got to know her new surroundings. The team continued working on her diet and made preparations for the next phase, letting her outside. So as I've said, the Arctic Ring of Life had two enclosures, visually accessible to each other but separated by two moats and a boundary wall. Each enclosure was designed to represent a different ecoregion inhabited by polar bears, one a tundra and one a pack ice enclosure. Late December 2002 and the morning arrived. On the day, many questions filled the team's minds. What would happen if Bella didn't want to come back in? What if she panicked? Elsa calmly opened the outside slide, leading to the tundra enclosure. Bella ventured slowly outside onto the grass, looking down and smelling it. She smelled everything, her brain working and thinking. Elsa wondered if it conjured up any memories for Bella. Bella reached the pool and tasted it. She circled the entire enclosure twice in her investigations. As a grand finale, she lay down on the grass, rolled over, feet in the air, and wiggled, wormed, and gyrated in a dance of joy that ended with her collapsing in an exhausted heap. After an hour and a half, Bella returned to her room. Her appetite increased, and the team worked quickly on an integration plan with the other bears. A female named Sissy was voted as least likely to be aggressive and most likely to build a peaceful bond with Bella. They were given visual contact with each other, and Bella was fascinated by Sissy. Sissy was 26 years old, and she and her twin sister Nikki were born at Pittsburgh Zoo in 1976, and both came to Detroit in 1998. Sissy was a reserved and self-determined bear. The next day, Bella was allowed out into the tundra enclosure again. Each bear would be gradually introduced to her one by one in this area, and it was imperative that Bella felt comfortable there. Bella did just that, sniffing and investigating all around. This is when the bad news bear walked in. Bella had tested positive for ringworm, and this fungal infection is highly contagious and is transferable from bear to bear by touch and exfoliated skin on the ground. Bella would have to be re-quarantined for 45 days for treatment. This was devastating news, and the team feared potential setbacks in Bella's recovery, so they worked on an interim plan to provide the substantial complexity that Bella required to continue her recovery. The whole tundra enclosure was scrubbed, and no bears were allowed access until after several nights of freezing temperatures to decontaminate it. Bella's quest to get back outside happened quickly, though, when the team found her waiting at the door to be let out. Bears are experts at detecting patterns of behaviour or recurrences of phenomena in the wild, which is how they're able to arrive at salmon spawning grounds or berry patches or areas where food is dense, at just the right time of year. It was possible Bella had noticed there'd been an indoor day between her two outdoor days, and this meant today was an outdoor day. She was quiet and patient in her watch. Her appetite waned, but keepers worked hard to bring movement and life into her apartment, creating a waterfall with a hose and dumping fresh snow, which Bella seemed to enjoy. Every day she got novel items which she briefly interacted with and also ignored. In the morning and throughout the day, she sat quietly by the outside door and listened, her ears moving, following the vocalizations and movements of the other bears. It was an interesting time for the other bears, as they were entering breeding season. At this time, bears almost turn into shells of their former selves as they become focused solely on breeding. Boards had to be placed over the mesh, but Bella still tried to cram her eye through to see if she could spy on the others' dramas. It was difficult for Elsa and the team to watch, but necessary. Elsa herself wondered if Bella would ever cycle or one day display breeding behaviours as well. Over time, Bella's appetite increased. She gained a healthy amount of weight and busied herself with nest building, napping, and upending enrichment items. Eventually, Bella was released from quarantine on February 26th, and it was time to begin introductions. It was important that Bella had choices, was safe, and could replace any poor decisions she made with better ones as she learned. Environmental enrichment, such as scatter feeds, beddings, branches, puzzle feeders and such, would help take attention away from the fact that there's a new bear around as well. These offer the bear an activity they can nonchalantly feign interest in while deciding what to do. This can also help decompress a situation. One mistake is to try and fit the newcomer into a pre-existing bear group. You need to take apart the old group and build a new one around the newcomer. This would give Bella a chance to establish herself with each bear on a more equal footing. The boards were stripped away from her exit door, and Bella was right there. Bella and Sissy were again given visual access to each other for several days. Sissy was almost uninterested, but Bella watched Sissy with intent. Soon enough, it was time. After a hearty breakfast, Bella was keen to get outside. Sissy was given access to the tundra enclosure first and settled herself at the far end and played with some enrichment. Bella was then let out into the enclosure. Sissy didn't notice, too engrossed in her task. Bella started wandering for about 10 minutes, feigning interest in enrichment, sticks, rocks, basically everything while staring directly at Sissy. Like a cub, Bella went up to Sissy and tried to touch the side of her face with her nose. Sissy whipped around and faced her off, clucking, huffing softly, and mock-mouthed Bella's neck area. She was being assertive, but not excessively aggressive. Sissy sensed Bella's complete lack of malice. Undaunted, Bella tried to make contact again, trying to encourage Sissy to play. Sissy again engaged Bella and backed her up while huffing. Bella got the message and went about her fake foraging business. Technically, this integration was a success, but Bella was still alone. On their fifth day together, Bella got to experience the pièce de résistance of the facility, the 170,000-gallon, 13-foot-deep saltwater pool with visual access to seals. On this day, Bella experienced her first deep water since swimming with her mother in Hudson Bay all those years ago. As she was enveloped by the water, it was as though the circus life was washed away. She was a natural, swimming deep to explore, gliding through the water, touching the glass. Had she ever touched glass before? Unlikely. It was then that she got to the viewing window, dividing the seals and bear pool. When it was first built, there were concerns for the seals' health, but planners banked on the fact that seals are intelligent creatures and would realise they were safe. It even became apparent that individuals from each species began to play tag with one another. Bella was not expecting this, though, and immediately stopped when sighting a seal. She observed and then began checking the corking on all four sides of the window. She was hunting, and learning from a wild mother meant that Bella had those instincts to hunt. Seals were meant for eating. That's what she'd learned, and she never lost this attitude towards them. Bella was gradually introduced to the other bears. There was also a young male named Adak, who none of the females took very seriously, Bella included. He had the nickname Poor Adak. And then there was female bear Vilma. At first, Vilma was a prickly individual, and upon first meeting Bella, staff were concerned. But Vilma and Bella became lifelong friends, spending hours playing in the pool together. Vilma had an often abrasive personality, but was just desperate for someone to play with. Bella filled that role admirably. There was one final introduction to be made for Bella, to a mighty male named Triton. He was super-sized compared to her. Elsa felt of all the introductions, this would be Bella's greatest challenge. Once the two were introduced, Bella and Triton did the usual feigning interest in eating while both sizing one another up. Bella then turned her back on Triton. He pretended to eat his way over to her and leapt the last 30 feet, making contact with her. She reared up and bounced off him, paw punching him in the shoulder. He backed up. Bella wasn't truly angry, she just wanted some space. They danced like prize fighters, cheek sniffed and huffed, showing they were anxious, and Bella pointed her upper lip. Eventually, Triton tried a different tactic. With his mouth, he picked up a maple branch and dropped it in front of Bella as a gift. She ignored it and rejected his advances. Bella was smiling, however. Triton picked up the gift and put it down closer to her. Again, she pretended not to see it. On the fifth time, he crashed it down right next to her, and Bella accepted the gift with a quick sniff and lip check. She turned and walked away, and he followed in traditional courtship behaviour. Continuing the dance, she turned and half-heartedly chased him off. There was a little local rivalry between the females, but over the winter, Bella and Triton developed an extraordinarily strong bond. They played together, ate together, slept together, and frequently near each other. Even though he was almost twice her size, Triton was gentle and sensitive to Bella's physical abilities, and he skillfully self-handicapped so as not to injure her. During breeding season, they were equally enamoured with each other, and Bella was cycling. Sadly, in accordance with AZA Polar Bear Species Survival Plan, in March 2004, Triton was moved to Indianapolis Zoo to breed with a female polar bear named Tundra. This plan is a cooperative bear population management plan among an array of animal parks and ensures there's a healthy and diverse polar bear population. In a strange twist of fate that can only really happen in real life, Triton's father, a male named Norton, was sent to the Arctic Ring of Life. Norton was another bear without a past. Known to be relaxed and slow, this changed when he met Bella. He courted her as well, and Bella was receptive to his advances. Following this, Bella became less interested in socialising and began to check dens and old nesting sites. In September that year, she was given exclusive access to the Tundra enclosure and maternity den apartment. And by November, she was resting most of the day there. She began nest building in earnest, fluffing, rearranging the straw again and again in the den. By mid-November, she slept almost exclusively in the cubbing den. Then, picture it, a late November evening, 11:06 p.m. Bella had given birth to a beautiful baby cub. This is something that was literally inconceivable a mere few years ago. It just shows how far Bella had come along. Within minutes, Bella reorientated herself and was smell-checking and licking the cub. Into shape, you might say. By 1:30 a.m, the cub was sprawled on her chest, nursing on and off for the night. Mentally and physically healthy polar bears are known to be attentive and patient mothers. Bella was this, relaxed and confident. Okay, well, hope I'm going to say this right. Bears of all species have an epipharyngeal pouch, roughly at the back of their throat, which is thought to amplify some of the communication sounds they make. It's plausible cubs use this intensifying chamber to good use when crying for attention. Bella's response to the cub's cries were measured and often ended the crying. With all new mothers, the first weeks are always a time of discovery and a bit of trial and error, like adjusting the cub's position on her chest to nurse, and experimenting with lying positions to suit both of them. In early April, the staff began to acclimate Bella and her cub to going out into the tundra. The cub stuck close to her protective mother. The pool was initially emptied for safety, but gradually refilled slightly higher each day. Bella taught her cub to swim, and they played together in the water. But when Bella was teaching, she wasn't smiling. Her mouth was serious and straight-lined. The cub was given the name Tellini, and she was good at keeping herself entertained, all under the watchful eye of her mother. Tellini was entertained by the presence of human visitors, especially children, and Bella, who, as single mother acting as both mother and playmate, seemed to welcome the chance to have some babysitters around and a little help. Bella taught Tellini strategies for hunting seals involving practice, practice, and more practice. These methods were likely taught to Bella by her wild mother. Tellini was a quick study, swimming in tandem with her mother, and within weeks was practicing hunting strategies by herself. By her second birthday, in November 2006, Tellini was well over 200 pounds, and the period of natural dispersion, where Bella would tell Tellini, in no uncertain terms, they had to part ways, was almost upon them. In anticipation of this, the male bear Adak was introduced to both of them so the cub could learn to live peacefully with other bears. In fact, poor Adak, over time, gained a new nickname, Uncle Adak. He was completely enamoured with Tellini and indulged her whims as much as her mother did. They played for hours endlessly. He never tried to engage in any courtship with Tellini. Seasons came and went, but Bella never did have another cub. She lived peacefully, and the old adage of what Bella wants, Bella gets, rang true all this time. Eventually, in July 2012, Bella passed away at the age of 28. She had lived most of her life as a circus act, but at least for the latter part of her life, she had been able to live as a polar bear, taking full advantage of the opportunities presented to her. And yeah, that's just some of my favourite parts of the book. There's so much I've missed out. Vivid descriptions of polar bear cubs, how people live with bears in Hudson Bay. Also info on like Bella's roommates' personalities, some of which I haven't mentioned, and their interactions, and lots of observations on bear behaviours and fun asides and personal stories of Elsa's. There's even some discussion of how unrelated bears share food resources and how these bears ask for permission to do so from those already at a given site. Essentially, yes, I thoroughly recommend this book. And one of the things I love is when people from differing backgrounds come together for a common goal. And in this case, to end these polar bears' suffering and put their needs first. For anyone interested, Tellini was relocated to the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago in 2018, and at time of recording, she appears to still be there. So far, she hasn't had any offspring from what I can see. But yeah, if you're in the area, go say hello. Elsa herself continued her work helping bears and sadly passed away in 2016, but her books and works live on. She was also the founding president of the Bear Care Group, a non-profit whose mission is to foster improvements in global bear welfare and conservation through communication, cooperation, and education among international bear care professionals. They've done this through a variety of means, such as organising multiple workshops and conferences across the world. I mean, and Hopefully, we'll talk more about Bear Care Group in future, as I've become involved with them in recent years. There will be links in the show notes to where you can purchase the book, info on the Bear Care Group, a dedication by National Geographic on Elsa Poulsen, and links to organisations like Polar Bears International and the IUCN Bear Specialist Group, where I've taken information from. We'll be back in the next episode, talking about more bear stuff. Thanks for listening. Bye for now. The Bear Den, the American Bear Association podcast, was written and presented by me, Philip Stubley. The music was composed by React Music. Thank you to everyone who has helped make this podcast possible, including Karen Hausman, Bill Lee, Clary Lee, Stephanie Horner, Donna Brazinka, Ross Coyer, and Angie Page. You can find out more about the American Bear Association at americanbear.org. You can find Vinshuti Wildlife Sanctuary on Facebook and Instagram. You can ask questions and submit comments about the podcast to pw@americanbear.org. The ABA is a special circumstance. We do not condone feeding wild animals. If you enjoy this podcast, help support the ABA either by donating, becoming an ABA member, symbolically adopting a bear, or come visit the sanctuary during the season and say hello. And if you do enjoy this, please do us a favour. It'll barely take you a minute. On whatever platform you're listening to this on, please either follow us or click the bell for updates and notifications. Please share with family and friends and rate the podcast, as it all helps us grow and is greatly appreciated.